Good morning, everybody. It's November 2nd, 2020, and this is episode 114. We're getting up there.
Yes, we're getting old.
right.
Mark, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself, and then we'll lead in. I'm excited about our guest today.
Yeah, so I'm Mark Van Sunik. I'm the director for the Center for Prophetic Imagination.
And I'm Daniel Wolpert. I direct MICA, the Minnesota Institute of Contemplation and Healing. And yes, we've got a guest today. I'm very excited. Dr. Don Matthews is joining us. And to talk specifically about his newest book, I have a copy right here.
Yes.
And Black Centrality. Probably won't be able to read the subtitle on the screen, but How Ancient Black Cultures Created Civilization, Revealing the Truth That White Supremacy Denied. And Dr. Matthews, you know, you've been one of my online teachers for a long time now. It's really it's really been great to know you on across the interwebs. And I really appreciate this work, and so just very honored that you're joining us. And so we'll let you introduce yourself in whatever way you'd like, and we'll lead off into this, what I think is really important topic and kind of perfect for our current election season, too.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Unfortunately, right.
Yeah, well, I appreciate the invitation, Mark and Dan. Many years ago, when I thought about doing a doctorate in religious studies, my purpose was to talk about the African American contributions to Christianity. Also the role of Africa in that process. And so my dissertation, which was published by Oxford Press under the name of Honoring the Ancestors, an African cultural interpretation of Black religion and literature, was an attempt to do that. And so most of my early work was on how West African religion contributed to the African-American understanding of Christianity, because the prevailing notion before the 20th century was that Blacks were Christians or knew something about God because they had been taken from Africa in chains that justified slavery, right? They didn't know God. They had no moral compass. And when they did become Christian, the prevailing dialogue from scholars was that they were, quote, aping Christianity. It wasn't the real Christianity. They were imitating. They were aping. Even you see that in the work of Thomas Jefferson when he talks about Phyllis Wheatley, the great Black poet, and says, oh, well, you can train a monkey to do anything, right? And so Jefferson, even though he said Blacks had the possibility of a moral and religious imagination, but intellectually they just could not cut it. And the way they understood Christianity was one way of determining that. So in my research, I began to understand not only what were the roots of African culture and development of African-American Christianity, but how did white Christianity or white Christians or white society respond to that? And so a part of my book was to talk about how that came about, the history of African-American religion in America. I tried to settle the question as to the transmission of African beliefs into African-American Christianity. According to the University of Chicago and Oxford Press, I accomplished that goal. So, and I mean, how could they be wrong, right? And so I wrote an article in 1994 for the Journal of American Academy of Religion. This was after the Rodney King incident. And I realized that racism in America was really embedded in our denial of the Black role in the development of Christianity, period. Mm-hmm. Not just African-American Christianity, but the role of Africa and Christianity as a whole. Christianity, Judaism, Islam, the great Western religions, they had made no space for an understanding of the role of Africa or Blackness in their development. And so I wrote that article in 1994, a proposal for an Afrocentric curriculum. When it was accepted, the editor said, well, this book will change the way we understand Christianity. apparently no one read it. Except Black doctoral students. And because they read it, and because it was published in the Journal of the American Academy of Religion, the signature journal of the field, it allowed them then to do doctoral studies looking at Africa and how it affected Judaism, Islam, and Christianity. So many of my biggest fans are now teaching in theological seminaries and universities, because they could go to their dissertation professor, "What do you mean I can't study Nubia? What do you mean I can't study what the Coptics did? What do you mean I can't study Egypt?" Mm-hmm. Matthews, you guys just published this article that said it's important to do this. And so I've had many pleasant surprises at conferences where students have come up to me from Emory, Columbia, Harvard, Yale, et cetera, California Riverside, Xavier University in Ohio, who told me how grateful they were for that work. Mm-hmm. But I realized a couple of years ago, I really had only touched the surface. And I began to do more and more research. One of the things that the white scholars tried to do is to deny that Egypt was the source of Christianity, when they realized it wasn't white. You know, mm-hmm. They could no longer hide the fact that this was Asia or white Europe. I mean, I have scholars, I mean, internationally known scholars who are writing in the 1890s stating that the Scandinavians came down to Egypt and started that culture. I mean, that's how preposterous. These are the most respected scholars in the field, right? I talk about that in Black Centricity, how whites covered up, the Black contribution. Also, one of the things they did is to try and say that, okay, we know that Egypt isn't white, but they weren't the first. It was the Sumerians who were the first. And we know for damn sure they're not in Africa. So, and maybe the Egyptians learned what they learned from the Sumerians. Yeah, that worked for a while until 1870, when Sir Henry Rawlinson discovered that the Sumerians were Black people. Right. It just blew everybody's mind in the academy, right? And so from that time, they developed what they called the Sumerian problem, or the Sumerian question, in order not to answer the question, in order not to reveal that Blacks were actually Sumerians. Thankfully, certain Assyriologists, believe it or not, from the University of Chicago, countered that and proved decisively that they were Black. But, you know, who cares, right? I mean, it's not important, right? That's important to cover it up, but it's not important to talk about it, right? So I really believe that racism is based on this fundamental idea that Blacks are inferior. Had nothing to do with the development of our most precious ideas. I mean, how many right-wing evangelicals would praise the Black Jesus, mm-hmm. right? Who would understand that both Abraham came from Sumer, which was a Black country, the earlier Chaldeans, or came from Moses, who's a brother, right, from Africa, right? Sigmund Freud was basically almost tarred and feathered when his last book in Moses and Monotheism, when he said Moses was an African, freed people out. And Freud was a collector of Sumerian and African and other, quote, Oriental arts. His book, first book, Interpretation of Dreams, was an application, really, of the dream process that he first understood was the role of the Egyptians. So, Joseph and the Dreamers, the whole bit, right? That whole understanding of religion and psychology and how it came out of that nexus. So the book was about tracing the history of the cover-up, the scholarly cover-up of the Blackness of Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. And so that's where I'm at now. And I'm beginning to produce other kinds of publications to emphasize that that perspective.
Okay, well, that's awesome. You've given us just a few things to think about here in 9 minutes. So one of the things, one of the reasons that I was just very excited to learn about you and your work was that it was so obvious to me in looking at you know, and we've had an episode on this, on the white Jesus, right? That famous white Jesus picture that you right. see in just about every, you know, church in America, right? Sure. From the 50s right. or whatever that was. Right. You know, so it's very obvious to me that that this idea that, you know, Jesus was white, he spoke English, he wrote the King James Bible, and, you know, that's where Christianity comes from. So, but then for you to be taking it back even deeper, right, that this isn't a problem that starts with whiteness and Jesus, that this is a problem that starts with whiteness all the way through. Right. And I had really noticed, you know, this way that people would talk about Egypt as if it was sort of not African, right? Right. Like it was this special right. weird kind of white place, you know, it was right. dissociated from the rest of Africa, which, right. you know, if you think about it for a second, right, it's completely absurd. but it clearly, you know, as you're talking about, it has this emotional weight in right. terms of the development of Christianity and Western whiteness in general, because, like, whoa, if all these black people taught us all this stuff, like right. that's kind of a problem for our, right. for our exactly. racist ideology.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. Right.
It seems like there's a lot of this sort of two-step that people do with, you know, people you mentioned who are African, to say, like, well, they might be African, but they're not culturally African. Just kind of like how white supremacists have kind of overt white supremacists have shifted, saying we're not against black people. We're for Western civilization or Western culture. And so it's this way of dividing it out. That right. I feel like that's, to me, that's the really explosive idea, that somehow this idea of what we think of as Western civilization, which is somehow a good thing, and that Christianity is the same as that, needs to be fundamentally interrogated and what that means and looks like.
Right. And it's you know, people talk about colorblind racism, right? As a part of that, the idea that somehow, first of all, that you have a place in the world where there are these walls, black wall, white wall, Asian wall, nobody intermingled, you know, it's just so ahistorical. It's almost oxymoronic. I was talking to Dan before about black, I asked people, how many black women do you think there are in the Bible, right? And it ranged from zero to one to everybody, you know, depending on who you spoke to. Black folks already understood, right, that, you know, most of the people in the Bible had to be black or brown, right? I mean, that's the only people who were there, right, until the New Testament times, Greek conquers, you know, Egypt and the Near East, and 330 BC, then you begin to get the influx of Greeks into Palestine and into Egypt, etc. But the idea that Abraham, Moses, Isaac, Jacob, Ruth, Bathsheba, I mean, on and on, these were not white people. You know, all of our Sunday school material has taught us that our whole life, right? That these are white people. Yeah. And they sure weren't African, they sure weren't. They don't even look Semitic in terms of the, and so you have this real ignorance about what that's about. I was mentoring a student in prison. His cellmate was being recruited by the Nazis in the prison, and he got showed him my book. He's like, "Come on, you gotta be kidding! You know, black people didn't do this. Show me a picture." So I sent him my book with Diop's thorough research about the Africanness, the quote Negro features of Egyptian people, right? It just blew his mind, right? Because white supremacy is based on this image of whiteness, right? Of the white Jesus, white religion. Whites are the ones who started quote civilization. What happens if that's challenged? Even though we don't like the word civilization, I mean, historically you can't get around it, right? Egypt, Sumer, that's where quote Western civilization started, in the Fertile Crescent. We've been taught that since day one. We were never taught that these were black and brown people. Right. Well, that's not important. Yeah. And if you do ask the question, well, you know, they're probably white. I mean, what do you mean? Why do you don't even think to ask the question, right? Yeah. When I was in seminary, none of my biblical professors talked about the cultural history of those people, right? Just don't even talk about it, right? It's just erased. But in a day like this, we need to be very explicit about the contributions of Black and Brown people to our world. Otherwise, the absence becomes the story. It becomes reality. And as long as that absence exists, as we know, absences, right, are much more powerful than statements of truth, right? It doesn't even occur to you to even ask the question. And so, I think it's important to really be as historical as possible. And I do believe, I think that's really important, because there are a lot of folks on the Black side and some of Afrocentric brothers who tend not to be historical, right? Who are caught up in the romance of magic, and you could easily lose yourself on the other end. Black centricity tries to chart a path between strict Afrocentricity and Eurocentricity and say, hey, let's look at Black people who call themselves Black, who understood themselves to be Black. I mean, they were called Black before the advent of modern racism. And let's be as historical about this as possible, because those major ideas of resurrection, eternal life, circumcision, baptism, all those came out of that, out of those Black cultures. I'm using Black not as a race, right, but as a cultural identification that they used and other people use for themselves.
Yeah, awesome. Okay, we've got one comment which we'll throw up, and please get your comments coming, because we know that at 10:30, when we get 12 comments, the show would be just about over.
So Mark writes, the literal whitewashing of the characters in biblical literature is a great injustice to the three Abrahamic faith traditions. I suggest it plays a major role in the failure of those faiths to engage in the work of true justice and spiritual unity.
Okay. Yeah. I'm not a Jew or a Muslim, so I can't speak for them. I know a lot of my brother Muslims would say, yeah, well, we do a lot. We've always been aware of the Black role in our religion. Bilal, right? Bilal was the first servant of Muhammad, who led the first pilgrimage back to Ethiopia, right? Before Muhammad went to Mecca. And so there's always been more of a consciousness among my Islamic brothers and sisters about the role of Blacks. I mean, even Gandhi said, well, why are you guys Christians? You should be Muslims, right? Because you don't have a strong history of racism in Islam as you do in Christianity, right? I don't even want to get into the Judaism question, because it's so sensitive in terms of the oppression that Jews have suffered. And besides, Nick Cannon lost his TV show dealing with that, so I don't want to. And unfortunately, there are a lot of myths in the Afrocentric community about the role of Judaism during that time period. And so it really takes a lot of study and careful discussion to do that justice. But the caller is right about Christianity. I mean, it's no doubt that the portrayal of Christianity as a white religion has been fundamental to ignoring the problems that people of color face. You know, we are not seen by white people as equal, just straight up. You know, one of the things I talked about with some of the students, especially even about the role of women. I was asked about the role of women by Swarthmore College where I gave a presentation. And women were much more powerful in those days, especially among Egypt and in Sumeria. You didn't have the same kind of blatant sexism. So when you begin to uncover the Black roots of our civilization, you also find that patriarchy didn't always exist in its same forms. And the Romans and Greeks would kid the Egyptians, saying, you guys give too much power to your females. What's wrong with you? We don't get it. You aren't as manly as we are, because you actually honor and respect your women. So once you begin to look at the world through Black eyes, you begin to see more than just race, but other aspects of culture also come into focus.
Mm-hmm. Couple more comments coming in. Maria writes, not to be disrespectful to all your research, Tutankhamun sure looks a lot more white than Black, and he was long before the Greek invasion. And I thought there were Sumerian statues with blue eyes.
Or 2 points. Actually, Tutankhamun really solidified the idea that the Egyptians were Black. Most people stop writing about Egypt as being white after Tutankhamun's tomb was discovered. So you may want to look at that a little differently. But I like to say that Egypt was like Barack and Michelle, right? You got your light-skinned Egyptians, you got dark-skinned Egyptians. They're still black folks, right? Yeah. At least in the way we understand blackness, right? Mm-hmm. You don't have blonde, blue-eyed people in Egypt or in Sumeria. It just does not happen. And if you do see a Sumerian statue with blue eyes, you know it's a fake, right? Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, as I began to do my research, I wondered why all the Sumerian statues I saw were much more on the Obama side until I began to do more research and found the ones who were more on the Michelle side. So even scholars have tended to only emphasize a certain, you know, physiognomy, right? Mm-hmm. Playing out their own idea and reinforcing the idea that these could not have been black people. And if you look at, there's a book, I forget the author now, but she writes about Inanna, the great goddess. And she has a beautiful picture of two, quote, Negroid looking people from ancient Sumeria from 2400 BC, right? Mm-hmm. So those images exist. But whether the scholars are being honest with you, that's a whole different question.
Yeah, and one of the things recently, there was this great exhibit, and I don't know where it is right now. It was in Minneapolis last year, this Sunken City Egyptian exhibit, which was from this incredible temple city just north of Alexandria. Okay. And you're mentioning all of these religious rites, right? Resurrection, baptism, all this. So this was this great temple city of Isis and Osiris. And the exhibit describes, I mean, all these things, right? Sure. It's sure. all the stuff that gets brought into Christianity. What was amazing is there showed all these statues of, right. you know, emperors, priests, all of this. I mean, this is obviously a room full of black people. I mean, right. you know, I mean, it was just sure. so obvious, sure. right? Sure. And again, as you're saying, the idea that we're not paying attention to these images and really noticing this, and then noticing how, oh yeah, look, all of these very important religious roots, right. even many of the particular images of their particular religious techniques. The grass images that they use, the agricultural images that right. you find in the Bible. I mean, all right. these things are right there. If anybody gets a chance to see that, like I said, I don't know where it's floating around in the world right now, but it's an incredible exhibit. Really just backs up everything you're talking about. All right, we got some more comments coming in.
Adam writes, how powerful would it be for white Christians particularly to offer that Jesus was black anytime they mention Jesus, to explicitly say what they know and understand every time it comes up?
I mean, that'd be very powerful. See, one of my pet peeves is going through seminary and reading all these articles from New Testament scholars. And this is where I'm riffing on Dan. Plato, Platonic influences. No one talks about Osiris and Isis, Egyptian influences. Yet that was the religion of the common folks. Right. You didn't get slaves reading Plato, you know? But they were participating in the mass festivals of Isis and Osiris. Yeah, but we won't even study that. You know, it's off limits because we set up our institution so that if you want to study black folk, or you got to go to the Egyptological section, Near Eastern studies. If you want to study real, you know, Christianity, you go to the divinity school. But they never offer cross classes. You know, it's like these two areas of knowledge have been separated, and so it never comes together. And I think the next step will be the scholars will also have to eventually look at the Christological implications of Egyptian religion. A couple have done that, but only on the history of religion side, not on the Christian theological side.
Thank you for bringing that up, because I feel like the Platonic influence stuff, you know, it's there. And then when we start feeling bad about whiteness, then we say, well, that Greek influence was bad. But the idea of shifting, saying, let's start talking about some of the other influences, doesn't really come up. Right. And so until you said that, like, some part of my brain knew that, but I'm like, you're right. I tend to focus on bashing some of the Greco influences rather than saying, look, it, there's a lot of different influences here and I need to do some work.
So, sure.
Thanks for bringing that up. More comments. Heather writes, the LGBTQ interpretation of the Ethiopian eunuch as baptism is critical for ordination and equal rights.
Sure. Well, and that, you know, and Heather bringing up the Ethiopian eunuch is another great example to me of this. I mean, the Ethiopian Christian church is probably the longest continuously operating Christian church in the world. Right. You know, here is something that, I mean, I think we probably all agree that that guy must have been black. You know, and to me, I've always seen in Christianity that, like, oh, we have this story. Oh, isn't this great? And then it's like, oh, but that guy just then disappeared. And let's not really talk about, you know, him or that church or anything. And yet it, you know, and the flip side would then be to also say, well, gee, okay, well, there was one black guy in Jerusalem, but just one, you know, nobody else. And, you know, it's crazy, right? I mean, it's just nuts. But,
and one of the things that people forget also is that the Ethiopians count Solomon as their ancestor. So even pre-Christian, there was a large Jewish community in Ethiopia, in Africa.
Yeah.
Right. I was just reading some of their texts last night, actually, that have been uncovered and published. And so even before then, but in the ancient world, they understood that. We don't understand that because of
racism.
Kathleen writes, I feel really stupid right now. Does this mean Cleopatra was black?
Cleopatra was black culturally, not physically. She was Greek. And that's one of the problems with my Afrocentric brothers and sisters. We have pictures of Cleopatra. She's an average looking white woman, which, you know, with short hair, cropped hair. She may have had a grandmother who was black, who was Egyptian. But it's obviously she was from the Ptolemaic dynasty. That's when Alexander the Great had basically overthrew any of the last black
Dan's frozen. Hopefully, I'll come back.
Okay. Come back, Dan.
Yeah, she was a white woman, you know, physically, but culturally, we call her the soul sister. That's what we call it. Because she's thoroughly culturally Egyptian. She bought in 100% to what Egypt was about, because religion, philosophy, way of life.
Deborah writes, when we traveled in South Asia in the late 80s, many of the small, more rural churches depicted Jesus as brown and black. He looked like the people worshiping there. It was a refreshing truth.
Oh, great, fantastic. Yeah.
And it's interesting, though, about those churches. So Deborah's my wife, so I was part of that traveling duo. What was very interesting is that those churches were all what we might call, more sort of populist churches,
right?
So if you then would go to the big, you know, cathedral, that looked like a European, you know, cathedral in the town in the same country, it was very different. But when you went to these very popularized small churches in the rural areas, you had all these pictures. I mean, all the biblical characters were black.
Sure.
It was very interesting.
Yeah.
Catherine writes, seminary PhD survivor here. Undoing white supremacy in Christianity is such a huge task and involves dealing with so much pushback from people who are absolutely convinced of false ideas. How do you choose your strategies for teaching and writing? Just for some background, Catherine did her PhD on the white supremacist, white supremacy among Lutherans in Minnesota, and she had a lot of pushback from Luther Seminary about trying to talk about that. They just didn't believe
it. Oh, sure, she did. Yeah. Well, you know, many are called, but few are chosen. Yeah. Blessed are you when you suffer for righteousness' sake. You know, it's not easy. You know, I feel for her. I've tutored many white doctoral students and master's students. I know the kind of pushback they get, the kind of pain they suffer, because the kind of humiliation they experience, right? You got to be kidding. That's not a real topic, et cetera, et cetera. So I feel for that. I just decided to follow Jesus. What can I tell you? And I write and publish as much as I can, wherever I can, and speak wherever I can. You know, so that's just keep the faith. Keep the faith.
It's a good word.
Susan
writes, wow, such smart dialogue today. Fascinating. Thank you so much. Please put guest name and social media info in comments. I'm interested to follow further. Yeah, where would be a good place for people to follow along? I can write that up real quick.
I'm a Facebook addict, so just go Don Matthews on Facebook.
Yeah,
that's how I post most of my stuff right now. I'm working on some other avenues. My daughter's a digital media specialist now, so now she kind of helped me do some, get more sophisticated with my social media. Right now, Facebook, Don Matthews.
Okay, so let's put your name back up there so people can kind of look for you. And your book is called Black Centricity.
Right.
And that's your latest book.
Other
comments here. Gus writes, it's interesting to me that we always talk about Catholics and Protestants. Maybe we talk about Orthodox. But Coptic and Ethiopian church never makes it the big list of church traditions. That's totally true. Like, doesn't come up much. Last comment. Julia writes, I so much appreciate this conversation in plain words that I can understand. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, great. All right. Well, thank you for the comments. And Don, thank you just so much for this wonderful, wonderful lesson. And the book is great, Black Centricity. One of the nice things is that it's a short book, which is awesome. And it is, you know, Julia's right. You write this in a style that is very clear, very straightforward, simple, but very profound. And so, you know, it's not like some of these history texts, where you got to wade through like 800 pages of stuff and you're just sort of glazed over. It is very, very revolutionary from the point of view of white America and the white church. So really encourage everybody to check it out. All right. Thanks for joining us.
Dan, thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. Yeah. Blessings.
Okay.
All right. And there's just that little red button on the bottom where you can take off after we're going to do our little end and then we'll be done.
See everybody tomorrow.